हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे अमर जीवन सदा पापे रत नहि को पुण्यरलेश अमर जीवन सदा पापे रत नहि को पुण्यरलेश फरेरा उद्वेग दिया छे खेद खातो दियाचे जीवेर क्लेश फरे रे उद्वेगा दियाचे जे खातो दियाचे जीवेर क्लेश निज सुख लाघी फापे नाही धोरी द्वयखी न स्वर्त पार निज सुख लाघी आवे नाही डोरी दोयही न स्वर्त पार फर सुखे सर मित्या बाशे फर दुख सुख कर
फर सुखे दुखी सर मित्या बाशे फर दुख सुख कर
अशेष कामना हरि मजे मोरा क्रोरि धम्बा फारायाना
अशेष कामना हरि मजे मोरा क्रोरि धम्बा फारायाना
मरमत सदा विषय मोहिता हिंस गर्वा विभूषाना
मरमाता सदा विषय मोहिता हिंस गर्वा विभूषाना
निद्रलायाय स्फते सुकरे भीरता आखर जय उद्योगी आमे
निद्रलास्य हाता सुकरे भूयाता
अखजय उद्योगी आमी प्रतिष्ठा लागेया सत्य आचरण लोभहता सदकामी
प्रतिष्ठा लागेया सत्य आचरण लोभहता सदकामी
एहन दुर्जन सजन बरजिता अपराधी निरंतर
एहन दुर्जन सजन बरजिता अपराधी निरंतर
शुभ कार्य शून्य शरणार्थ मना नाना दुखे जार जार
शुभ कार्य शून्य शरणार्थ मना नाना दुखे जार जार
बटके एकोना उपाय भीहीना थथे दीना आकिंचना
बटके एकोना उपाय विहीना tatatina abhinchana.
Bhakati vinoda prabhura charane kare dukkha nivedana.
Bhakati vinoda prabhura charane kare dukkha nivedana.
Amara jivana sarapaperata nahiko punyera lesha.
Amara jivana sarapaperata nahiko punyera lesha.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
I am an impious sinner and have caused others great anxiety and trouble. I have never hesitated to perform sinful acts for my own enjoyment. Devoid of all compassion, concerned only with my own selfish interests, I am remorseful, seeing others happy. I am a perpetual liar, and the misery of others is a source of great pleasure for me. The material desires within the core of my heart are unlimited. I am wrathful, devoted to false pride and arrogance, intoxicated by vanity, and bewildered by worldly affairs. Envy and egotism are the ornaments I wear. Ruined by laziness and sleep, I resist all pious deeds, yet I am very active and enthusiastic to perform wicked acts. For worldly fame and reputation, I engage in the practice of deceitfulness. Thus I am destroyed by my own greed and am always lustful. A vile, wicked man such as this, rejected by godly people, is a constant offender. I am such a person, devoid of all good works, forever inclined towards evil, worn out and wasted by various miseries. Now in old age, deprived of all means of success, humbled and poor, Bhaktivinoda submits his tale of grief at the feet of the Supreme Lord. So we can remember that these different aspects, these different songs, the different things that they talk about, that they're geared at all levels, very gross and also very subtle. So we can see that here at first when we hear this song, then we would think, well, this song, you know, maybe something applies to me, but, you know, most probably doesn't. I'm not, you know, that evil and that wicked and nasty and all these things. So in that level, then there are people who have been, you know, what we would typically call wicked, nasty, and, you know, very terrible, like is mentioned here. But at the same time, as if we actually check within the heart, even someone who seemingly is materially pious but not devotional, these qualities are still there. They're still there. But you don't notice them so much. They're able to be covered very nicely by the pious endeavor. But why are they performing the piety? Why are they doing all these different things? Because they're interested in material benefit. Because they want material benefit. Even if they're not, one will say that the person is completely devoid of any materialistic endeavor. But if they're not devotional, then what is left? So maybe they're not interested in gross material pleasures or facilities, but they'll be interested in subtle. People will praise them. People will think, what a devotion, a religious man. So that's deceitfulness. For a neophyte devotee to present himself as very religious, that means deceitfulness. That's deceitfulness for such a person. So then, and we see is that if nothing's connected to the Lord, then it's impious. One is stealing, it's all Krishna's, it belongs to Krishna. We're using it in nefarious ways for our own pious credits. And what will we get from it? We'll get materialism from it. Maybe fine, maybe subtle, maybe very cultured, you know, very glorious on the material platform. But because it's not connected to Krishna, then what is the speciality? What is so wonderful? So this aspect then is something that has to be understood, is that these songs are talking to us. Whatever level we're at, they talk to us. They're not talking to someone else. Many times you may think, oh, this part of the Bhagavatam applies, this part doesn't. No, but it all applies. It may be on a more subtle or a more gross platform, but it always applies. That is the uniqueness of the instructions that are given by the Lord and the Acharyas. Because they know what is the heart of the living entity. They come here, then they can see, they can understand, they observe, they go through the activities, and they can see what people are experiencing. So therefore then they write about them. So that is the specialness of these songs. So we can see is that, you know, we cause others great anxiety and trouble. You know, either we are performing grossly sinful activities, what in the material would be called sinful, or we're performing non-devotional activities, so therefore also anxiety is being given to somebody. Because in the material world, to gain something, someone else wants the same thing. There's always this scarcity mentality that what someone has, then there's not enough to go around. So everybody gets an anxiety. There's an anxiety for this, even if there's another point, because they think we are performing our activities, the people are dependent upon us, so therefore if we're not there, or not there when they need us, or are busy taking care of their needs but not there at the time, and there's some anxiety when someone's coming. So anxiety is that we're creating anxiety, even though it may be considered a nice anxiety, but it's an anxiety, you know, that, you know, for our own enjoyment, then basically we'll do anything. know, so this whole material world, belongs to Krishna, should be used for Krishna. So if we're doing something for ourselves, even though it's according to the pious direction, ultimately it's sinful if it's not connected to Krishna. So there will be therefore the materialistic people, then they are having this quality. Devoid of compassion, connected only with my own selfish interests, I am remorseful upon seeing others happy. Others are happy. When it's in this gross form, it will be envy. When it's in this lighter form, it will be jealousy. You know, but in any case, the ultimate thing is when Krishna, we're feeling bad that Krishna is enjoying. So naturally, then there's going to be something for ourselves that we are going to feel that why I'm not enjoying like that. That is what brings us here. So a perpetual liar means that ultimately we're servant of Krishna. So if that is not being understood, then we're not being truthful. Truthful means that we understand that we're servant and we're trying to act on that platform. Miseries of others is a source of great pleasure for me. That we see as others are suffering and some difficulty. Maybe in the gross sense means someone who's very demoniac, and in the gross sense, like Magrari the hunter, then they see like that. But other in the subtle sense is that others are having a difficulty, and if we're in a good situation, it's our situation is special because others it's in a bad situation. Right? To be pious, to be wealthy means someone has to be poor. Right? If everybody's wealthy, you're not wealthy. You understand? The pleasure of wealth cannot be experienced amongst a group of wealthy people. Except one may identify, yes, we're a group of wealthy people because everybody else. But if everybody had the same amount of wealth, then what is wealth? Nowadays, someone will say they have a fancy car, some nice clothes, maybe a nice house, like that. Yudhishthira Maharaj has had a sabha that was, I think it was a few miles by a few miles, 5,000 hands. Yeah, so 1.5 miles by 1.5 miles. That was his sabha. You know, in the middle was a great lake, and in it were real lotuses, but also crystal lotuses and leaves and everything. That was there. You know, everything was so unique. Duryodhana and Shakuni, they spent, you know, days going around and just looking at everything in the sabha and seeing that things that were there, all the architecture, he didn't have in his palace. Right? And that was the seat of the Kuru emperors. So whatever was the best that was available on the earth then would have been there. The best would have been there. But then we see is that then he found things that were there that he had never seen before. Never seen before. So then who's wealthy? He had, they were the emperors. They had so much wealth. They were the kings of Hastinapur. But when Yudhishthira Maharaj did the Rajasuya sacrifice, then Duryodhana, it was his service was to collect the wealth that the kings brought as tribute. It means they've already gone around. The Pandavas already went around to establish that Yudhishthira was the emperor. And at that time, they all paid tax. And from that tax, then they could do the sacrifice. Now they're coming again. Now they're invited to the program. And when they come, then they're bringing also tribute, just as an offering they've come to do. And whatever they gave, everything was at least in a thousand. Whatever you gave horses or 1,000 horses. You gave chariots, 1,000 chariots. You know, whatever you gave, it was 1,000. And there was so much wealth that each of the kings thought, yes, because of my gifts, Yudhishthira Maharaj is able to perform this sacrifice. But little did they understand that everybody was giving like that. So Duryodhana, the one king would come to give his tribute, and Duryodhana's business then was to take it and put it into the treasury. And he's as strong as 10,000 elephants. Right? There's 5 people that have this strength, so he's one of them. You know, him, Bhima, Dhritarashtra, Kichaka, and then Jarasandha. These 5. So he's that strong. And he would get tired carrying it.
He'd have to sit down for a few minutes. He'd be so tired. And the kings would have to sit there and wait, you know, what is going on here? No one's taking care. So he'd feel very embarrassed and get up and again carry. And it was so much wealth, so he became so disturbed. And he's already unlimitedly wealthy. He can't spend what money he has. But the money that Yudhishthira had was beyond that. And then we see, this is so wonderful. And then Yudhishthira asked Narad Muni, when he came for the opening ceremony of the sabha, you please tell us about the other sabhas in the universe. You know, then Indra's is 1,000, you know, miles, I think, or by 1,200 miles, or 1,500 miles. Yamaraj's is 1,000 miles by 1,000 miles. Brahma's, you can't even understand it. You look at it, and when you think that you understand what it looks like, it's changed already. Its architecture just changes right there in front of you. Its color changes, its shape changes, everything changes. Like that. So it's never the same. It's always, you know. And we see in the earthly kings, and they'll have, you know, so many intelligent ministers and other qualified persons, but like Brahma, you know, and he'll have the personified Vedas, you know. The Rig Veda personified will be sitting there in his court, you know, and all good qualities of like mercy, kindness, they'll be personified sitting in his court. Like this. So this wealth, we can't, we have an idea that I'm wealthy, but that's because someone else is poor. Right? As soon as you see someone else is wealthy, more wealthy, you feel poor. So just the feeling of wealth means someone else has to be poor. You understand the subtlety there? So that means this aspect is we must be happy that they're poor. Otherwise, how are we happy we're rich? Right? Even though it may not be conscious, the whole point is there's so many unconscious things that are there within the heart. So this is being pointed out here by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Like that, the material desires of the core of my heart are unlimited, wrathful, devoted to false pride, arrogance, intoxicated by vanity, and bewildered by worldly affairs. Envy and egotism are my ornaments. Like this. So the desires within the heart is unlimited. So that's the whole process of chanting Hare Krishna, taking shelter of the Lord. Then all those seeds, then Rupa Goswami gives the example of, you put them in a pan and roast them, and then they won't sprout. Or if you soak them in water too long, then they won't sprout. So if they're either drowned in the you know, holy name or in the, you know, the fire of devotional service, then they go away. They are gone. But they are there. So when we recognize, then we can get rid of them. So the whole process is to see and understand. He's making us aware. So then such a person, ruined by laziness, sleep, and we resist all pious deeds. What we should really be doing and all this, we have a tendency, we resist. You know, we should chant, but then we don't. We should read, but then we don't. We should do this, but then we don't. So all these things, then they create problems for us. Destroyed by our own greed, always lustful, is that if we're satisfied with what we have, then we'll be satisfied, as Bhagavatamrita was saying this morning. If we're satisfied with what we have now, we're happy with it. That means we would be satisfied if we had more. But if we're not satisfied with what we have now, then even we get more, what we think I'll be satisfied with, we won't be satisfied, because there's always more than that. Like Duryodhana, he has enough. He has more than enough. Still he's not satisfied, because Yudhishthira has more. Even he gets everything Yudhishthira has, and the gamut, he's still not satisfied. Because Yudhishthira exists and he could get more. Right? Yudhishthira started with nothing, ended up with more than Duryodhana. Now Duryodhana has all that, but Yudhishthira can get more again. So therefore, he can't be satisfied. So satisfaction means we're satisfied with what we have now. And if we're satisfied with that, then we can be satisfied. If we can't be satisfied with what we have now, we cannot be satisfied. So the point is that materially we'll never be satisfied. Therefore, it's better to not worry about it. Just be satisfied with what's there, but our real endeavor should be for the spiritual. Then the material, whatever we have, then we can be, it's okay, you know, we can be satisfied. If satisfaction means we'll be happy from it, it'll never happen. Satisfaction is just, you know, this is what Krishna has given for doing my service, and we're happy with that, then service goes on, everything goes on, we're satisfied. Right? So that's the difference, are we satisfied with what we have, or we're satisfied with what we're going to get? That's the difference. So what we have now, that means the mode of goodness. What we will get, that's the mode of passion. What we had, that's the mode of ignorance.
So then, like this, then we'll be rejected by godly people, always offensive. Yeah, so inclined towards evil, worn out and wasted by various miseries. So by all this endeavor, we become worn out, we become tired. So now Bhaktivinoda Thakura is pointing out, in old age, deprived of all means of success. So now it means if there is some means of success, then we would be going on in the same way, trying to find all different ways to get this and that. And when we're deprived of all that, we can't get anything, we can't be successful, then we think, okay, then we have to surrender. So we see here is, whatever it is, we can see this, we've gone through this, but if we've surrendered, that's good. Then it's fine. But if we haven't surrendered, then now is a good time. Like that. Otherwise, then we have to wait until like this, we're too old and decrepit and can't do anything. Then we may take it up. But then the difficulty is it's late and it's hard to do any service.
Maharaj, you're making surrender sound like it's something we do once, but isn't it a gradual process? It's not like something we can do now or later, but rather, isn't it that we are constantly increasing our level of surrender?
But we have to make that commitment to surrender. Uh-huh. That's the thing. Once we commit to surrender, then it's a practice of actually perfecting that surrender. But we have to come to that point where we're actually, you know, what it means, it's just like faith. Prema means faith, mature faith. So there is, but there's also faith on lower levels, faith in that we accept taking up the process of devotional service, you know, the basic things, then accept associating with those persons who will increase this. Then we have the faith that if we follow the process strictly, then we will make progress. Then we have the faith that if I try to remove the anarthas in my heart, you know, like here Bhaktivinoda Thakura was talking about, then it's more. So then it just continues like this, you know, that we become steady, we have a taste, we have attachment, there's bhava, then it matures to prema. So the same way the surrender is, these are the symptoms of surrender. So it's there, but we have to make that commitment. But that commitment, like you say, is gradual, but it's a matter of always committing to do it. Is that we have to surrender. Because wherever one is at, until one comes to prema, there's always something more to go. And it's a matter of surrender to make that next step. You know, because it's these things will come when all the, you know, one has taken up the process chanting, but then there's a matter of surrender to take up seriously the association of devotees. Then there's more surrender to then take up the process very seriously. Like, you know, like that. Then there's, you know, more surrender to actually get into removing the anarthas from the heart. You know? So, like this, then there's more and more endeavor that must be there. More and more endeavor.
Within the six areas that he's going to be discussing?
Yeah. That's why we're going through, like you see, it's getting deeper and deeper. like this. You know, first it was just, you know, I was born and I'm in the material world. So then that's a problem. You know, then it's within the material world and I've gained knowledge and I'm, you know, just taking part. You know? Then it's, while I'm taking part, my serious endeavor to become wealthy and powerful and all these things. So then that's what we see as like basically like your external manifestations. Now it's like what's going on inside. These are the qualities by which we are able to work. This envy, this greed, this lust. These are the, in the material world, the driving force behind it. Like that. So it can be seen on the gross platform, it's there, but it can also be seen on the pious platform. Or when it comes in light of devotional service, then it's, you can really see it. So we're mentioning these things just so that we're aware. Because otherwise the tendency is to think, I'm doing the externals of it, I'm performing the ritual of devotional service, which is important. But we may think that that's it. I do that, that's all. At the same time, as we're not careful to see is what is the quality of how we perform our service, the quality in which we relate to others and deal with others. Like that, that's the difficulty. If that's there, then the tendency will be, then these qualities will come up, the deceit will come up. You know, what we see is, you know, it's not uncommon, you know, devotees will be, you know, disturbed in who's going to be in what position, or whether they're going to be in that position, or who's staying in which flat, and who gets what facilities, and how much money they get, and who's getting what, and why they're getting, I'm not getting. You know, like example, you know, in one temple, that they had, the devotees were, at one point everybody lived in the temple, that was the old system. But in the old system also, nobody had anything, right? Brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, grihastas, everybody had the same stuff, nothing. Like that, like that. There was, you know, nobody had anything. You had a couple of pieces of cloth and that was it, nothing more. Like that, everything, you just took prasad in the temple and this and that, you know. You might have a, you know, something, a, you know, something for winter, or a sleeping bag, or an alarm clock, or, you know, like that, but nothing. You could fit it all in a little box, BTG box, you know, that's what, you know, your life was in that box. And everybody was like that. But then as, you know, things became more opulent and all that, and instead of, you know, 20 people in one room, and there's, you know, only a couple in the room with bunk beds, or less, and grihastas instead of, you know, a whole bunch of them in one room. You know, they just put up a few curtains and that's, you know, their part of the house. Or all the women lived in one ashram and the men lived in another. That they have their own houses, this, that, then they need this facility, that facility, and all that. So that becomes quite expensive. You know, then you have, and with time so many get married and then you have so much facility is required. You know, before you had, you know, one run-down van or something like that, and everybody was dropped off. Now people need their own facilities, own cars, own phone, own computer, it takes a lot of money. So then temple was seen as they can't take care of this. So then either devotees had to live simply or they had to arrange their own. So then there were so many who were unwilling to, you know, live more simply, like that. So then they were requested, okay, so that if you want to live at that standard, then you should create your own, you know, facility. So then they shifted out of the temple and then, you know, they got into the rigors of, you know, trying to make ends meet in the material world. And then those devotees that were willing to live simple, you know, they just, you know, live simple like that, live in the temple, do the pujari work and all that. Then those grihastas that had moved out said, why are they allowed to live in the temple? There was a zero discrimination that the ones living in the temple were living like brahmacharis. They didn't need anything. They just took prasad in the temple, that's it. You know, had some little hole in the wall somewhere to live in, and that was all. They couldn't discriminate. And so then, it was such a riot that the temple had to ask all the pujaris and all those people to move out. You know? So, therefore, this is the meaning. And this is devotees, and this happened just a few years ago. And this is a big, you know, supposedly, how do you say, enlightened temple, not one of these, you know, backwards Asian temples full of Asians, you know, or South Americans or Africans, you know, but this was like first world enlightened, new agey, you know, people. You know, sophisticated, so-called sophisticated Westerners. And this happens all over the world. At all those sophisticated places. You know, so therefore, that's you're envious. Others, why they're living in the temple? That's envy. Or jealousy, at least. You know, I'm doing service, they're doing, no, it's a different, can't tell the difference. That's deceitfulness. You know, so many material desires. So, and these are, you know, we're not talking about, you know, 2-year devotees. We're talking about 20, 30-year devotees. So the whole point is this does make sense to us. Our problems come because of this. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes the trouble to write it. If it wasn't a problem for devotees, why would he waste a song for devotees? Oh, this is meant for the guys in, you know, high security prisons, you know. He's so kind, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote this one song for those guys that are in, you know, 10 life sentences in a high security prison, you know, like that. But for the devotees it doesn't. No, all these are written for the devotees. They also apply to the non-devotees, of course. But they're written for the devotees. So therefore, in our progress, we're aware of these things. We don't need to scare ourselves, but we have to be aware that maybe everything isn't going as well as it could be. And maybe the reason that it's not going as well as it could be is not because of everybody else. It's not because of the other person. It's not because of the management. It's not because of the society. It's not because of anything. It's because of us. So, like that, if that's seen, then we see is that there's always that opportunity. The gradual process of surrender means that every moment you're surrendering more. So it's still a commitment. Whatever you are, then we become conditioned to it. Then it's another surrender. So that mood of surrender is constantly going on. So when we say is that should be done, it's done. And then we're thinking about it, contemplating, and then we're seeing, I have to do it again. But this again doing it, it's not coming to the place where we are now, it's going to the next step, a higher level. So it's always progressive. Like that. It progresses that. Does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else? Or? We have in here. So the whole idea of these songs is then something, the way it's presented and everything is also very sweet, very pleasant. But very realistic. So then we can take advantage and we can, you know, contemplate. There's something for contemplation. So that's what we're looking for is to be able to apply this in our life. In other words, we shouldn't just hear something, it's nice, and then let it go by. We should try to apply it, try to contemplate it. Then we will find that we get something from it. Then it becomes very pleasant. You know, instead of being something, you know, means scary. It's scary is only if we don't want to deal with it. If we accept that the heart is like that, and then we're willing to work with it, then it's a source of inspiration. You know, it's just like the karmis. If you talk about death, they always think, why do we always talk about death? Because for them it's scary. They don't want to deal with it. But for devotees, it's not. You can talk about death, this, that, and it's a very, you know, something to think about. And even when you hear about stories about how this devotee left their body or that, and the kirtans, and what were their last, you know, thinkings, and this and that, it's very inspiring. So it's a matter of if it's accepted, then these seemingly very, you know, difficult sounding verses then become actually quite pleasant, like that, quite inspiring. Does that make sense? So continuing with the Jaivadharma, then chapter 2.
The soul's eternal nature is pure and everlasting. Jivir Nitya Dharma Shuddho O Sanatana. The next morning, saintly Premdas Babaji was plunged in the ecstasies of Braja. Although the saintly sannyasi wished to place some questions before him, there was no opportunity. Then in the afternoon, when they had finished their Madhukari begging of alms, they both entered the cottage of Madhavi and Malati Vines. The saintly Paramahamsa Babaji then kindly said, "O best of devotees, now that you have heard my explanation of the true nature of the soul, what is your conclusion?" Happy to hear these words, the saintly sannyasi asked, "O Master, if the individual spirit soul is by nature only atomic in size, how is it possible that his eternal nature is pure and perfect? If the soul is created at a certain point in time, then the soul's nature is also created at that time. If this is true, how can the soul's nature be eternally existing in past, present, and future?" Yeah, so we see here the sannyasi is very careful to see that he doesn't disturb then the bhajan of Premdas Babaji. And at the same time he sees, you know, he's waiting for that opportunity when he can ask. Also it's interesting here is the question about what is true religion. And so then Premdas Babaji says, so, and he gave an answer. Now he's asking, what did you think of the explanation of the nature of the soul? So in other words, religion means what is the nature of the soul. And then everything else, then you see it in relationship to that. When we understand the nature of the soul, then we can apply religion to other things. You know, that principle. Because what is the need of knowing the nature of something unless you're going to deal with it? Right? If you're going to deal with it, then you know that nature, but you have to know your nature to be able to understand it. So therefore, even other aspects of religion cannot be understood or performed. The whole Varnashram or anything can't be performed unless there is, how do you say? Unless there is an understanding of ourself. Otherwise, then what we're going to see, the other thing, is going to be changed. Our mentality is changed, therefore our perception of what is there of this world will also be changed. But if we understand our position, what is our nature, our religion, then when we look at the externals of this world, and then understanding how to deal with them, we can see properly. Because then we'll see it in relationship to who we are. Because religion means that you understand how these two things, how two entities are going to, understanding the nature of the entity and how they're going to relate. Right? First step is understand the nature. The next step is how they will relate to each other.
Does Krishna fit into that equation?
It means if we understand who we are, then we can actually understand who Krishna is. See, if we understand we're servant of Krishna, then Krishna becomes the Lord. If we don't understand that we're servant of Krishna, then like Jarasandha or Duryodhana, then Krishna becomes enemy. So then the relationship cannot be proper. It can't be eternal. Jarasandha can't eternally be the enemy. You know, the demons can't eternally be the enemy because it's not their eternal nature. It's only their perverted nature. Like that. By being in contact with the modes of nature, then they have developed those qualities. So they developed the demoniac qualities. So then you find that they are acting, though they may be like that for a long time, many, many lifetimes, but still it's temporary. So until you actually therefore their performance of dharma or religion is not actually going to be really pukka. Like that. The demoniac definitely are going to make trouble. Or they do things, but they it's simply for their gross sense gratification. Like the demons also on the lower planets. The heavenly there means heavenly as in Vedic standard. But the difficulty is that they are performing the religious activities simply for sense gratification.
That's all gross sense gratification. That's all they're interested in. So that's a misapplication. The demigods, then it's better. They basically understand that they're servants of Krishna, but still, because they still identify with the body, the gross and subtle bodies, therefore then they're very attached to the material energy and the facilities that they gain from that. So because of that, then they still don't actually properly perform religion. They're performing what we would call religious duties, but it's not actual religion, it's not Sanatana Dharma. It's Dharma of the temporary nature of things as they perceive it. Means the material nature works the way it works. It is the way it is. But depending upon how we perceive it, then we're going to deal with it. And that will create Dharma. So the Dharma is actually according to how you perceive things. You know, it's just like the example Prabhupada gives, is that how somebody sees is very, very different. So how they're going to deal is totally different. Means it gives the example. You take a very attractive young girl. So then the young, very, you know, qualified young man sees this girl as something very desirable. So then his dharma with that girl will be, you know, the whole process of marriage and then living as a grihasta and all that interaction. Because he perceives the girl as just something very valuable. The sage, he sees the girl as just, you know, as a bag of, you know, stool, urine, pus, bile, like that. So therefore, in his dharma of dealing, he doesn't deal. He stays out of the way, he's respectful, he sees the qualities of mother or whatever else, depending on the situation. If he's in the forest, he doesn't have to bother at all. He's in the city, then he'll see. So therefore, he'll perform religious activities completely different, the opposite. He'll stay away, while the young man will go towards. And then the dog sees the beautiful young girl as something nice to eat. Right? So he gets the opportunity, he'll just eat her. You know, like that. So he'll perform his dog duties like that. You know? So therefore, that's why the Babaji Maharaj was saying that religion is basically based on perception. Temporary religion is based on perception. Well, eternal religion is based on the reality of what is the material energy, the soul, this, that. So the Vedic literature, because it knows what is the eternal nature of the soul, the material world, and God. So even for those persons who don't understand that they are the soul, and that they are a servant of God, or even if they understand that they're the soul, but in any case, they don't understand that they're servant of the Lord, so the Lord's left out. Or even if they understand they're the servant of the Lord, but they're not so fixed in that, those material desires are still strong, then there has to be a way in which you have to be guided then how to interact. Right? The soul on its natural platform of pure servant of Krishna then will naturally, out of affection for Krishna, want to serve Krishna, and they'll associate with the devotees and find out how to best do and all this. You see, it's all these things of associating with devotees and taking direction from them and being steady in your service and having a taste for it and attachment for it and ecstasy. You don't have to take them, it just happens naturally. They just want to be with the devotees and find out, you know, be trained how to serve Krishna and everything like that. So therefore, it's completely different. There's no conditioned nature. It's the natural nature of the soul. So that process is called bhava-sadhana. The process of understanding that we're not the body, mind and body, that's called sadhana-bhakti. And once we understand that we're not that, that we are eternal servant of Krishna, and we're fixed on that completely without any material conception, that's called bhava-sadhana. Then it moves into prema. So, therefore, on the platform of in the conditioned nature, we understand what something is, but we don't really know how to deal with it because of that cloud of our covering. So therefore, then the shastras tell us, okay, this element you must deal with like this. Okay, water must be dealt with like this. you know, then people must be dealt with like this, animals like this, you know, mother like this, father like that, son like this, daughter like that, teacher like this, king like that, you know. King and minister like this, king and citizen like that, king like this, king and guru like that. Because you don't really know what is the nature. Because we are clouded, we'll see it in so many ways. Duryodhana saw Yudhishthira as an enemy. Even the Yudhishthira is not an enemy. So therefore, then if he sees him as enemy, then how to deal? So then Shakuni calls in this one Brahmin who is expert in diplomacy, and he says, yes, okay, he's seen as enemy, and enemies should always be uprooted. If you just leave them, then they're going to create trouble, like a fire. If you have a fire, even if it's a small fire, if you don't attend it, it'll burn everything down. So therefore, you have to uproot them, you know, completely. So then from this nice advice, then Duryodhana, follow religious principles for how to deal with an enemy, then created the House of Lack, and then arranged that politics to get the Pandavas to go there, and then, you know, with the idea to burn the house down with them inside. So therefore you don't know how to deal. So then the Vedas tell you how you're going to deal with each of these situations. Because you don't know who you are, you don't actually know what the material energy is. Because it's also coming from Krishna. We're supposed to serve Krishna. Material energy is serving Krishna. We're to engage the material energy in serving Krishna. But that's Sanatana Dharma. So either materialistic life or the sadhana, the process of sadhana bhakti, we have to be told how to deal with every element of this material world, because we have our own perception of it. This is valuable, that's not. Right? We have this oil lamp. We think it's valuable. Others think it's useless. So therefore others will just, you know, either neglect it or sell it in the market, you know, or leave it somewhere in some closet. You know, we'll take it out, we'll polish it, we'll land it, we'll put oil in it. Because we perceive it one way, someone else perceives it another. But the oil lamp itself has a nature. Like that. So if you see it as valuable, then polish it, put oil in it, put it this way, not upside down. Like that, put the oil in it, not too much, it flows out, make the wicks, you know, and then you light it like this and that, and because you're dealing with it, then you've touched the oil, don't touch other things, you'll make it dirty, like that. So, you know, you have to know then how it fits in. You're doing puja, so therefore it's dirty, so when you touch it, you have to wash your hands before touching your deities or anything. And if it's not valuable, then you just keep it someplace. Or, you know, why keep it? It's worth something. It's not, maybe it's not worth land value, but it's worth money value, so you sell it. Does that make some sense? Yeah, so then you have to understand what is the dharma of the something based on our perception of it. The reality is it should be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So being engaged in the Lord's service, then he likes lamps. He likes a lamp to always be there. There should always be a lamp burning with the deity. So therefore, then, how that's done? Oil should be in a lamp, which shouldn't burn out. So then, basically, you'll see it has all the same... It has its dharma, but now the perception is different. Now it's the Lord's lamp. So therefore, then we'll deal with it in a completely different way. If it's our lamp, when we like, we light it. When we don't like, we don't light it. When we want to polish it, we do it. When we don't want to polish it, we don't. You know, if some guests are coming, oh, polish the lamp, fix it up like that. No guests are coming, who cares? But if it's Krishna's lamp, then it always has to be kept clean and polished and nice. So the nature of the lamp is there. We perceive it in one way or another, so therefore we have to understand what it is. And then that's just dharma. Then you understand the nature of the lamp and our perceived relationship with it. But then the eternal dharma is us, the lamp, and God. You know, there's the soul, there's the material energy, and there's the Supreme Lord. So then those three together, then we see it. Now we see it in relationship to God. And I, as a servant of God, therefore I light Krishna's lamp. Does that make some sense? Like that. So that's why there's the overlap, because it is made out of material energy. So it will work basically the same way if you're just pious or whether you're Krishna conscious. Because being made of material energy acts in the same way. Fire acts in the same way, oil in the same way, brass in the same way. But the whole perception of the soul is different. Like that. So then you will see it accordingly. So when it's Krishna conscious, so we have to learn how to see it in a Krishna conscious way. The same time as we have to know what is the nature of the material energy. Therefore, so many rules and regulations are there because we don't know. Because it changes. From life to life, our perceptions change. So therefore, it's never the same. Right? Kid always asks, why this, why that, why this, why that. I don't think anyone has ever asked, why there's mothers and fathers. You know, why there's babies. They may ask where they come from, but they never, no one questions what is a baby. You tell a little kid, oh, who's that? Oh, that's this one's mother. Oh, okay. Oh, that one's there, that's her husband. Oh, that's grandpa. No one has any problems with that. Because every lifetime we've had mother and father. It doesn't matter what species of life. So that's common. But how you perceive something, that changes. That changes. You have different senses, you have different desires, so therefore you perceive differently. You know, you see color, you don't see color. You know, what colors you can see. You know, what you smell, what smells good, what doesn't smell good. So that's always changing. So therefore, the human being, it must be trained in what's religion. It won't come naturally. Unless they're very, very pious. And so therefore, many lifetimes of piety. Then for them it will be more natural to do those things, though they still have to be trained. You know, so that it becomes a conscious thing. Otherwise they may, without discrimination, perform things that are impious. You know, get into the wrong association, develop bad habits. Does that make some sense?
If it's common that the child understands his mother and things like that, but still the perception of each child would be different, isn't it?
That's there. But what I'm saying is that we can see is that why there's a need for religious principles being written down in the form of rules and regulations is because we're not used to it being like that. Understand? You know, it's just like pigs. You know, if you see pigs. When pigs sleep, then one pig lays down. The other pig stands right next to where the feet are of the other pig and falls down on top of that one. The next one comes and falls like this, like dominoes. You know? That's all the big pigs, right? Then in the gap between two pigs like that means they come down like this a little bit. In that place, that's where the little pigs sleep. So it's just a pile of pigs. You know? Like that. And so for them, that's very, very comfortable. So then as a human being, then you learn that maybe you don't sleep quite like that. You know, it's a different way of eating. You know, it means sleeping. You know, animals don't eat with their hands, right? So the kid, they don't mind doing that, but they have to be trained. No, you have to use hands. You know, and then of hands, just your right hand. You know. And like the animals, you don't just stuff it in your mouth as much as you can. You eat it bite by bite. You have to train. Otherwise, they don't know. So that's the whole thing is the rules are there for that reason. But the rules are only for the reason to help us understand how to deal with the material energy in connection with Krishna. Its purpose is to get us to the point of I am servant of Krishna and everything that I do should be connected to Krishna. That's the only purpose. And then once it brings us to that topmost understanding, at the same time, it helps get us to that topmost understanding. At the same time, it gives us direction so that we can practically now engage in that service. How do you know? Okay, we say, you should worship God. How to worship God? You know, what do you do? You know, you buy a ticket. You go down to the concert hall, and then you just start screaming at the top of your lungs. Right? Is that how you worship God? No, but that's how a rock star is worshipped. Right? And if they get next to you, try to grab whatever you can from them. You know, a piece of their hair, some of their clothes, something as a souvenir. Right? This is worship. Right? It goes on. So is that how we should worship God? Yes? No?
No.
No. Okay. So then that means we have to be taught, because we don't know. What does it mean? What does it mean, worship God? So it means how God likes to be worshipped. He says. He writes the rules. The shastras come from Him. Like that. They don't come from somewhere else. So that's the whole point, is that we need to understand that religion is only for this purpose. But it's important, but it's only for this purpose. How to understand our connection with it. But it's being misused. That's why the Bhagavatam says, don't use religion for economic development. Because if you deal with the things properly, then there's naturally a good result. So if your motive is, I will deal with it properly, then I'll get a proper pious result for my enjoyment, that's improper. Like that. Is you're supposed to deal properly with it because it belongs to Krishna. And we are in this world, but we don't want to be of this world, so we want to get out of this world. So then we see it even beyond liberation, the direction of liberation, but beyond liberation. So it takes on a whole different flavor, religion. Right? A whole different purpose. We've been misusing it up to this point. Religion is used for material benefit. But that's not what religion is for. Therefore, he says, it means he's explained this whole thing of religion, but then he sums that up and says, now that you've heard my explanation of the nature of the soul, you know, so what do you think? What's your conclusion? Right? Because for us, that's what's valuable, is we see God in our relationship with Him, the material nature, our relationship there, the material nature. So us as soul is the essential thing. Hearing this question, the Paramahamsa Babaji meditated on the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. Oh, excuse me. Oh, yeah. Okay, so he asked here, if it is true that he's created, then how can the soul's nature be eternally existing? Since he's so small, he's just thinking he must be created. Hearing this question, the Paramahamsa Babaji meditated on the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, smiled, and then replied, "O noble-hearted one, even though he is atomic in size, the soul is nevertheless perfect, pure, and eternal. His being atomic is only in relation to his substance. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna Chandra, is alone great in substance. The multitude of individual souls are as limitless atomic parts. Although the fire itself is not broken up into parts, many tiny sparks come from it. In the same way, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Conscious Being, is not divided into parts. But still, a great multitude of individual spirit souls are manifested from Him. As each spark has all the power of fire, so each individual soul has all the powers of consciousness. As each spark has all the burning powers of fire and can, in the right circumstances, start a fire that will burn down the entire material universe, so each individual soul has the ability to fall in love with Lord Krishna Chandra. He has the ability to be plunged in an ocean of love for Lord Krishna. As long as he is not in touch with his original nature, the consciousness and consciousness and atomic soul cannot manifest. The atomic soul cannot manifest its natural powers. In truth,
can you read the whole sentence
again? Yeah, well, it's one of these ones where it's been unedited. Here it says, as long as he is not in touch with his original nature, the consciousness and atomic soul cannot manifest its natural powers. So basically, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah. As long as he is not in touch with his original nature, the atomic soul cannot manifest its natural powers. Or as long as he's not conscious of his original nature. He's not in touch with or conscious of his original nature. He cannot manifest its natural powers. In truth, the nature of the soul is considered in terms of the soul's perception of others. Oops.
thinking, what is the soul's eternal nature? One should carefully search for the truth. The soul's eternal nature is love. Therefore, the soul is not unconscious or inanimate. It is different from unconscious matter. The soul's nature is to be conscious. The soul's nature is to love. In its pure state, love is identical with devotional service to Lord Krishna. Therefore, love, manifested as devotional service to Lord Krishna, is the original nature of the spirit soul. So the soul has the nature, this is important, he has the nature to be manifest, to be fully Krishna conscious, to be engaged in pure love with Krishna, because love is the natural position. But that's what Prabhupada mentions, is love has been transformed into lust. Right? Lust is just a great attachment, a great need. So love is a need. Love is that need to exchange. So then, when that's with Krishna, then it's actually technically called love. And when it's not with Krishna, then it technically is called lust. Though in this world, because all that we're doing is dealing with lust, so therefore those that the lust is on a more refined, considerate level, we call it love. And when it's a little less refined and less unconsiderate, then we call it lust. You know, so it's just within... within bad, then we, so this is better bad, and this is less bad bad. More bad bad, and less bad bad. Because that's all one knows. But the real thing is love something else. Love is then, is that selfless service to the Lord. And that, so here he's making the point that, that love is identical with devotional service to Lord Krishna. Questions? Yes.
Does the conditioned soul before he meets the, like say, advanced spiritual master or soul, does he have any love in his heart? Like, any bhakti? Is there nothing in it, or it's just
dormant? It's dormant. Means the nature of the soul is love. So that means it's there, but it's just been transformed. So it doesn't go away. It can, so therefore the process of devotional service is to transform that lust back into love. You know, it's just been misapplied, but it's the same, it's the substance is the same. But it's just that now it's in its you know, because it's not applied to Krishna, it becomes illusory. When we apply it to Krishna, then it becomes real. Because Krishna is substance, so when the need is substance, then that nature of that is also substance, so that's love. Like that. But when it's not in its proper form, it's illusory, then that becomes lust. So it just becomes transformed. So it's not that anything, devotional service doesn't mean that we're putting something in, it means we're drawing out what's there. But the tool that we're using to draw out is knowledge. Knowledge and practice. So we're performing devotional service. So that's real. To perform that service, we're having knowledge which convinces us that we should be doing the service. Then it shows us the process by what, how we can engage the material nature that's around us in the service of the Lord. And then, you know, we practice that. So the real thing is the service itself, that service attitude. But that knowledge is there because that creates detachment from the material world. And then that combination then puts our focus more on the devotional service. So when the focus is more on devotional service, then we progress more quickly. When it's less, then we progress more slowly. Like that. Therefore, having proper knowledge and proper practice then becomes an important part of devotional service. Like that. That doesn't mean one has to be a big intellectual. It just means that one has to contemplate that, you know, to do it nicely for Krishna, whatever it is, even sweeping the road. You have to have at least enough knowledge to understand which end of the broom to hold, you know, and how you sweep. You have to have that much knowledge. Otherwise, you won't be able to apply it. You know, you want to sweep,
for Krishna, but if you can't figure out how to work, operate a broom, then how you'll sweep? So some knowledge must be there. You don't have to intellectualize about, you know what the broom's made out of and, you know, all the different things. And that's not so important. You know? If the work is more serious, then yes, you can discriminate between qualities of brooms, what broom is for what work, and within the kinds of brooms, what's better quality and less, because you're seeing the relationship which does a better service for Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So, in other words, the knowledge is used to bring out what's already there, because what's there is covered by ignorance. So the knowledge helps us remove the ignorance. And the practices then help us remove the ignorance and purify it. But the most essential point is within this desire to study and know and desire to practice that is being done for Krishna. That makes it devotional service. That's what makes it special. Otherwise, you know, so many people want to know how to sweep. Right? And then they're very good at it. You know, like the street sweeper is very good at sweeping, but he's doing it because he gets money. So he wants to know how to do it nicely, so he maintains his job. But otherwise, it's not for... So there's no service. But the devotee does the same thing, even though maybe less expert. But because he's doing it to please Krishna, therefore it becomes very wonderful. Does that make sense? Because if anyone has a question, you just ask as we're going. You don't have to wait.
Well, I should hear that knowledge is a thorn through ignorance. So then, once the ignorance is removed, what is the role of the knowledge?
It's like, what's how you say, fire and wood? Is they both go out simultaneously. When the wood's finished, the fire's finished.
And that's what I'm...
Yeah. Means see, is knowledge is not important for prema. Right? Means knowledge is important to understand how to get rid of lust, how to convert lust into love. How to convert, you know, our natural... Because of need, there's activity. When you need something, you perform an activity to get that activity. So that activity then means service. You have to render service. Whatever activity you're doing, you're having to serve. So it's you're having to, in some way or another.
So chanting the holy name takes us
through
all those levels.
Yeah. That's why it must go on with the chanting. That's why that's the first thing to establish, is the chanting the holy name. The first thing to establish is not, you know, being a vegetarian or, you know, getting up in the morning or anything else, because those are assistants to the chanting. So the chanting is the real service. The hearing, chanting, remembering the Lord is the real service. Then all these other things are assisting that. They're assisting that. So chanting in the association of the devotees, like that, hearing the glories of Bhagavatam, association of devotees, that's also hearing and chanting. Worshipping, and the purpose is to worship the Lord, so therefore for us that means the deity. Like that. And then where the deity stays, that's the Dham. So therefore, then, one takes care of that place where the deity lives. One lives there, one takes care of the deities there, one associates with the devotees there, one glorifies the Lord's name, form, qualities, pastimes there. So So that's the essential thing, that's the essence. Then everything else is simply to get us to engage all aspects in God's service. Otherwise, we have a tendency is that, okay, there's time when I want to know about God, or I should be a little religious and all that, and that's nice. And then there's my time. But the knowledge and the rules and regulations are to slowly point out to us is that there is no such thing as my time, and then there's, you know, time for God. It means my time means time for God. It means that's, the soul is by nature the servant of the Lord. Like that. So that is the point. So here he said it's love. So love of what? So it has to be love of God. Because that only is where love is. Because love means selfless. So only in the spiritual world we can see that it's selfless. Otherwise here it's not selfless. I mean, maybe more selfless, so it's considered good, and less selfless, then it's considered not as good. But only in the spiritual world we actually have the pure, actual nature.
You talked about the importance of seeing things in proper perspective, so that comes best through following the acharyas' process and teachings.
Yeah, because they give what is specifically our perception. Because even there, you see, is that relationship. Where was he talking about that? This is again about perception.
Because there are many different kinds of perception that are bona fide, so you have to align yourself with one such perception.
So the perception is there. It's also how you perceive God. Is Krishna perceived as the Supreme Lord? And so therefore, as God is worshipped in awe and reverence, then that will take you to Vaikuntha. So therefore you should follow those persons who have that perception. You know, you want to go to Dwarka, you follow those who have that perception. When you go to Vrindavan, you follow those who have that perception. So therefore it's there's the nature to love, but then what's the perception? So you're going to love, you know, Braja Krishna or Vaikuntha Krishna, or you're going to love your country or love your dog, or you're going to love something. You know? So it's all depending upon the perception. So the acharyas give us specifically a perception. And then in that way then we're able to properly perform our duties. Otherwise, then we'll just make up our own. We'll have our own perception of what's good, and you know, put together something interesting, you know, like that.
Isn't knowledge an inseparable part of devotional service?
Knowledge is part, you can say, meaning a branch, but it's not itself devotional service. Understand?
But at any time, can we separate knowledge and devotion? So is it possible to separate? It's always intrinsic to devotion. So.
I say it's intrinsic, but the point is this knowledge. I say. Okay, you have a mother and a child. So the knowledge is, the mother is the senior, the child is the junior. Right? And so the mother then is supposed to be kind upon, the senior should be kind to the junior. Okay, that's the knowledge. So the mother in the relationship with the child, when he's sitting there and feeding them and putting them on the lap and doing this and that, then she's thinking, yes, I'm in charge and I'm supposed to take them. So where was the knowledge? You understand? So knowledge is not intrinsic to rasa. Knowledge is important for those who don't know what is rasa. Right? But once one comes to the platform where one can function on that platform, it's not necessary anymore. That's why thorn and thorn. Knowledge then takes out the thorn in the material world. But once we come to that platform beyond that, then it is simply the attraction and attachment to God that pulls us forward. Right? So it's a different thing. Right? But if one has brains, then it's one's service to use that brains in Krishna's service. If one doesn't have brains, then one takes the essence and leaves all the technical stuff. Right? Means the essence must be gotten. That's important. Technically, how it all functions and all that, then depending upon the individual, it means something to them, and so it's valuable to them in their life. Or it's not, but the essence everybody must take. Because the soul is by nature Satchitananda.
So there you could say that when they serve this thing, it's they do have so many ideas to serve and so many different, I mean, they're directed by so many different people, associates of Krishna and all that. So that's a, you could say, a different level? What's it?
That's not knowledge. That's chit potency. But it's not knowledge of this world, because knowledge is, in this world is separated from practice. There it's not. It's not separated. Because you want to know. You know? You want to know. But actual interactions not based on wanting to know. Right? But you... When you're in the process of getting to know someone, they're called an acquaintance. Right? When you know them, then they're called friends. You understand? So therefore, knowledge is very important, because that is a major thing in getting us out of the material world, that the knowledge has to be applied. But in the spiritual world, then it's a different thing. It's more of an understanding of how to practice. There it's practice. It means here it's also practice. You know, but the point is all this technical thing is, you know, there's the Supreme Lord, there's the soul, you know, there's the Sambit, Ladini, Sandini potencies, and all these different things. That in the spiritual world, no one makes this different. No one's sitting around and going, you know, oh, there's Radharani, she's a Ladini, and here comes Mother Jashoda, she's a Sambit potency, and you know, and then, you know, this one over here is this, and you know, oh, hey, there's Subal, he's... No one says that. That's not... That's here. The conditioned soul requires this, so that he starts to think in this way. He uses his brain there rather than his brain here. You know? So it's a matter of understanding. From that, then he can see the workings of the material nature. So it's not illusion anymore. See, when something's mystical, it seems to be how you do it. As soon as you understand it, it loses all its mystique and attraction. Right? You don't... Boy doesn't know who the girl is. Very attractive. Once you know, it's not so attractive. Right? You know, so like that. It's just... Whatever is rare, hard to get, that's what you want. If it's easy, available, it's no big deal. Right here is rare, devotees are rare, so we see how nicely they're doing. Right? Prabhupada's so powerful, he makes thousands and thousands of devotees, and the devotees don't care, they're a dime a dozen. You know, who cares to deal with anybody properly? Because there's so many of them. You know? But actually, it's so rare. It's Prabhupada's power that is potency that has done this. Right? You go to Bangladesh, where there's not so many devotees, and they're basically oppressed and not allowed to perform their devotional activities, and they're very, very careful. But here, where you're free to do it, then who cares? Right? So that rarity is that so mystical, makes it. So therefore, knowledge destroys that mystique.
It's also interesting in another 13th chapter, where Krishna describes what knowledge is. Mainly, he's giving qualities.
Yeah.
He's not giving information.
Yeah. So real knowledge is that. Because that's applied. See, his knowledge must be applied, and when it's applied, it'll give a result. So then that result, that's actually knowledge. That's it. That's a very good point. See, is that knowledge is not what we just think of, just book knowledge. I think that's one of the 20 qualities, maybe. One of the 20 qualities mentioned by Krishna is knowledge. It says everything else is his qualities. Right? Because what's so attractive about Krishna is qualities. And what he performs and all that. So that's what attracts. You become attracted to his qualities. Attraction, that's Madan Mohan, that's Sambandha. You become attached to those qualities, that's Prayojana, that's Prema. And then what do? You perform devotional activities. So you see the qualities, it's Govinda. And you serve him with qualities. You understand? Attraction and attachment are perceptions. You know, of what is the substance. But because they're dealing with Krishna, they are also substance. See, so it's a different consideration. You understand? These gopis aren't going to school. It's not that there's a school there, and Lalita is having a school and a blackboard, and you know, she puts up on the blackboard a picture of Krishna and takes that along, or nowadays a laser pointer and points out. This is Krishna. Right? You know, and all of them go, okay. So notice here, see, there's, you know, eyes are lotus, face is lotus, hands are lotus, feet are lotus, navel is lotus, so many lotuses. Okay, could you say that again? Like that. Okay, you know, so, okay, tomorrow you all come, we're going to have a test on, well, how many lotuses are. Tomorrow we're going to discuss moons, right? Moon-like face, you know, moon like nails, forehead like a half moon. Which one was half moon? Forehead. But nails are also not exactly fully round, so would that be 3/4 of a moon? No. Right? No. So what they're is pointing out, there's Radha and Krishna, you know, they like it done like this, you know? So you do it like that. That's not knowledge. You know? It's knowledge, but that's its real form. It's not like here where you sit down and study and try to figure out this and that. You know. You understand? It's different. Because here you can have knowledge and do nothing. There, it goes together. That's why here, knowledge and activities are supposed to go together. If it doesn't go together, you don't really get anywhere. Armchair speculators. Yes.
I'd like to know, you were talking about the love and then devotional service. In other terms, like love and service don't have such a close, you know, connection. Like the service won't carry the love. So in our nowadays terms, not in the like bhakti terms, the service and love are not so interconnected. But there's some Sanskrit term for service, devotional service. Like
it's seva. It's just seva. Yeah. Means one has to understand, just like there was I think it was a letter, Srila Prabhupada, is it a letter or some direction, where he's writing about kitchen standards. And in there he's talking about this boga and this prasad, they have to be separated. And he didn't like this idea of one refrigerator and having both in it. He didn't appreciate that at all. And then, you know, that there was mixing of the two. You know, it's not separated properly. So it has to be, this is where boga is, and that's another place, this is where prasad is. has to be very clearly separated. So then, and then Prabhupada says, if you can't follow this, you know, where is the, you know, the basically the evidence of your love for Krishna? We say we love Krishna, but what's the evidence of it? If we can't keep Krishna's bhoga and prasad separate, then how we can say we love Krishna? What's the evidence of it? What's the symptoms of it? So love is appreciated through service. Like that. The service is the medium for carrying that. It's like you give a gift to somebody. Right? The gift isn't the love. Right? But it carries that love. Right? So the process of giving it then becomes part of the whole thing. That's the symptom of it. The affection is there because, you know, something is given. Does that make sense? Like that. So if one understands it, then it is. It's because of the affection for Krishna, then we follow these rules. That's Bhakti Sadhana. And it's because we want to please Krishna, or we like doing these things for Krishna, then that's called Raghunuga. Vaidhi is that we know God's there and we're here and we have to serve. And so those rules and regulations are the medium. So I'm doing this because it's proper. When we like to do this, and we like to produce Krishna through that, that's called Raghunuga. Because then it's based on attachment. Does that make some sense? And then that will then turn into rag. Like that, it'll turn into attachment in the advanced stages.
Isn't it also very significant, Maharaja Prabhupada? You know, usually bhakti, if you look at other books, is always translated as love, but Prabhupada specifically translated as devotional service.
Yeah, because that's where it's applied. Mm-hmm. As servants of Govindaji, then the emphasis is going to be there. We're servants of, we're Rupa Nugas, so the emphasis is going to be on the service. That's why you see is that there's so much, you know, the emphasis is always on performing activities. So in the spiritual world, they're always performing activities. And in the material world, they're always performing activities. But the thing is you have to be able to perform the right activities. So how to dovetail the activities of this world to please Krishna, then that's the devotional service. Therefore, as we see with Baladev, then he gives that definition, that the service to something in pursuance of pure devotion is also considered pure devotion. So that endeavor to do is also considered. Yeah, service is the main. And so that's because love is appreciated. But what does that mean? You say the gopis love Krishna, so they just sit there in meditation and just absorbed in that feeling. That's it? That's their service? Does that mean? So that's the thing, is that it's that because of that, they're performing activities. Because they're attracted to Krishna, they're performing these activities. Because they love Krishna, performing these activities. So either way you look at it, you know, from understanding their relationship to Krishna, or means because their attraction to Krishna, therefore they perform services to please Him. Or because they're attracted to Him and they have love for Him, they perform their services. So either way, they end up back in the service. So then we see pastimes. So we'll say pastimes are the highest, but pastimes means service. So therefore it's very significant, probably. Prabhupada, you know, gave his devotional service rather than just bhakti, his love. Because the love means service. It means here he's saying the soul's eternal nature is love. But that's not dormant, because if it's dormant, then that means he's only prayojana. Right? And if he's like the Mayavadis say, he's only impersonal, only eternality. You know, that's the sandhini policy. So that's not complete either. So there must be activities. So therefore the love is eternally shown through activities. So the activity becomes what's perceivable. You know? Like that. So that becomes... So I think yes.
Yeah, the soul has eternity and has also blissful. Soul is blissful also. So when we do devotion service, how we get satisfied of that? What is our satisfaction when we perform devotion service? And it's like in a material life, we satisfied of doing the material activities. Must be satisfied also when we do devotional service, but how we should be satisfied by performing devotional service?
How you should be satisfied?
Yeah,
how you should be, or?
Yeah, exactly.
How you know you are?
Yeah, or? Like that, yeah.
Basically, the example is given is how do you know you're satisfied when you eat? You know, it happens.
Yeah, but if my stomach is full, means I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
Prabhupada Goswami also gives an interesting understanding in the nectar of devotion. It's also mentioned in the nectar of instruction that because if we're performing devotional service favorably, properly, then we're under the shadow of flooding in Shakti. And so we're enthused by that Shakti.
Mm-hmm.
So they will always be enthusiastic. And we're always enthusiastic, not talking passion. He also gives a definition of what enthusiasm means in NOI. So if we're, you know, like in performing with endeavor in Krishna consciousness is his definition of enthusiasm. So if that is there, we can understand that we are actually, you know, that's the case. Then enthusiasm comes from being under the shadow of Vladimir.
Prachodayat.
But it's interesting, Prabhupada gives a definition in the Bible that means to be endeavoring with intelligence in Krishna consciousness. So it's quite a package to get together.
Mm-hmm. Today's what? Friday? Okay. So then we'll continue again on Monday. Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.